Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome into Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for making us part of your Wednesday morning. I sure do appreciate that. And a little bit of a scheduling snafu this morning, and completely my fault. We've got the county commissioner in next week, and I was thinking they were in this week for some reason. Sometimes math is hard, but they're always in the third Wednesday of the month. This is only the second Wednesday of the month. What that does, though, is allow for us to play for you a little bit of a special coffee break this morning. Recently, some elected officials were allowed to go on a tour of the North Hills Fire, and I got to tag along. We got a firsthand look at just where and how that fire started, why it was so difficult to put out, and got some insight into what those firefighters were facing up there in the North Hills. So we're going to play for you parts of the conversation during that tour. First, here's Tri-Lakes Fire Chief Bob Drake.
If we could have put it out, we would have put it out. It just isn't possible. So I've scheduled out a route and went and drove it again this morning. And in a relatively short amount of time, we can give you the feel for those of us that were on the ground standing together side by side, DNRC, the sheriff's office, the volunteers, everybody just standing there, and it was absolutely a seamless operation, because that's how we do it every single day. And we all bring our toys and we all play together, and we have one goal, and it was the only goal that we, marching orders that we had, was to put the fire out. And we did everything we could to make that happen, and I'll show you why it didn't work.
Bob played tour guide for us as we drove up to the North Hills and the start of that fire. Really nice to see, as we went up there, signs on residents' fences and mailboxes thanking the firefighters for their efforts. Standing within feet of where the blaze started, multiple officials gave us a breakdown.
Good morning. I'm Mike DeGroski. I'm the chief of the Fire Protection Bureau for the Montana DNRC. And Chris Spleedoff here was the incident commander on the fire on the first days. And I just want to give you just set the stage real quick about how we think about people like Chris. We expect them to use their knowledge, not just let them use their knowledge, but expect them to use their knowledge and make good decisions about how to expend the taxpayers' money, what resources they think they need, what resources, and we empower them to order the resources that they believe they need to control the fire. I just kind of wanted to set the stage about how our agency thinks about people in the role that Chris was playing on this fire.
And I, from a local standpoint, can tell you that they walk that talk. Those are not words on a piece of paper. That is something that happens every single day between the volunteers and DNRC and the crews that we have, and we work together. It doesn't matter what color the truck is or who's doing what. And we work seamlessly together because we work so hard at it. We came from a really dark place in 2000 that wasn't happening, and it happens today because of all the hard work of people like Hoyt and the people that were here before them and Chris and we do stuff together, and it really does make a difference. So this is where it started.
Here's Sheriff Leo Dutton explaining to us exactly what happened when that North Hills fire got started.
So this is a little bit of aftermath of what started the investigation. Started right away by the Bureau of Land Management. Law enforcement officers, they got right on it. We got them the intel, and they went right to work. So this is put together right during the fire. When I say right during, probably 45 minutes. That's where the tannerite was set up, and just a little bit to the back there. So that's the origin of the fire. Now I will tell you, this is a shooting range, or a lot of people like to come and shoot here. The problem is, this is clean. When we got here, it was not clean. And that's a little editorial part on from me, but.
Sheriff, when you say clean.
When I say clean, there was debris, yeah. There was brass, there was ammunition that wasn't exploded. I'm all about responsible ownership for guns. I like that. But while we were interviewing the individuals who started the fire, rounds were exploding over here. So there was, if you go on up further, there's trash. The signs have been shot. You look at there, all kinds of things, the people not being responsible for the freedoms that we have. That's where it started. Now, they did attempt to put it out. They tried to run up there. And if you want to, here in a minute, we can all just try to run up that hill there.
If we are going to go up that hill.
But I mean run. And I'm talking run with your feet, and that's how you're going to try to put the fire out. So the idea of putting this fire out that just started across that hillside with the wind, think about that. It takes off. So it takes off. Anybody got cell coverage here? Try to call 911. They couldn't. Whatever service they had, they couldn't call. So they left this area, headed that way, and to call. They did make a call. So if you look up Montana Code Annotated, why we didn't charge them as a criminal charge, that's why. They still made an attempt. Now they're still liable for the suppression costs and all of those kind of things. So volunteers don't sit in trucks. Volunteers work, and they have to go get their vehicles and then come here. So that's a time when somebody says, well, I saw the smoke. Imagine this. Imagine you have a campfire, and how many miles away can you see that campfire? You can't. By the time, if you can see a fire, a nice column of fire at the bonfire, that's huge. So the idea that, well, I saw a little smoke. Think about a campfire and how much you need to put it out. You can't just pour the jug on it. That's why I brought this. You can't do that. They tried. They left. No one's here doing suppression. This fire is going, and you're going to see the territory that it's in. So that's our part. That's when we get here. Back to you.
So Chris and the DNRC crews, so this power line is under construction. Believe it or not, the shooters in here shot the poles off. They shot the poles enough that they could bring the poles down.
Like this one laying right here, Bob?
Yes. So they came in here, and then the whole line is being replaced with steel. And the power line people that were building it, they were streaming out, and they had left some of their equipment in the cul-de-sac, you'll see when we get up there. And they're leaving to get out of the way. So the fire is burning that way. And the wind is taking it that way, the terrain's taking it that way, the fuel's taking it that way, and the little two-track road that's underneath the power line that they have worn in with the backhoes and the cement trucks and all the stuff to build the line, it's holding that. And there's DNRC engines along there. The volunteers are streaming in, and we got our tactical tenders, and I'm assuming that this track is not going to hold, and we are watering and trying to create humidity along this road. And it kept jumping over the line, and it would jump down in there, and we'd run hoses up the hill and try and catch those spots, and we're trying to make it stay to the left of the power line. It's the only barrier that we've got, and then this is a secondary barrier, and we're not going to lose this road. And that's what we start doing.
At this point, Bob takes us up the hill to see just where that fire headed. He and Sheriff Dutton and a couple of others, Senator Steve Daines, he jogged up the hill. Most of us walked. But you can see when he gets to the top just how thick the trees are up there.
The fire is 3 feet from you. One wisp, one puff of wind from the wrong direction, and the fire's on you, and you're surrounded by this. That's the reality on the ground for the firefighters that were in here. And the fire's raging and going that way. Beaver and his crew, they're ducking in, they're digging a pan line 18 inches wide. How effective do you think that's going to be with any kind of wind? And they're working their butts off trying to hold that. It jumps the line, they back out to the road, they go down a little further, and they try again. And they're doing that over and over again, trying to get the fire stopped. They're doing everything they can, and this is what they're dealing with. They can't even walk through it. And they're risking their lives to do that again and again and again. until they, you know, they can't go any further. Well, then the fire starts picking up steam, because it fires and structure fires, at least they double in size every minute, and that's what this is doing. It's getting bigger and bigger. So I'm in my command rig. Chris and I end up jumping in together, and we're going, let's go see if we can find a spot that's going to be reasonable to stop this. We need a road. We need a grassy area. We need something, because we can't stop it in this. I don't care what you got. You can't stop it in this. And went around, and there is a road that cuts around, and we have, you know, you think, oh, is this a possibility? Well, the trees are hitting the mirrors on both sides as we're going down this two track, and we get back in there and we look at each other and went, this isn't gonna work. We can't put anybody in here safely. The fire's still running towards us. We're out in front of the fire, and we got out of there, and we're looking again for the next spot. And there's some spots up further that are a little bit more open, and we're looking to see if we can get stuff in there. And we come back, and the first helicopter's here, and they're working hard trying to get going to Lake Helena and coming back. I don't know what the cycle time was. Somebody told me how many minutes it was taking them, and they're dumping all the water that they can, trying to support those crews on the ground to get the hot spots. And we just can't do it. We can't overcome the BTUs. There's too much heat in what we're doing. And so the fire keeps going to the north. And I'm sorry, the structure guy in me is going, oh, please keep going north. Because all the subdivisions are to our east. And if it goes north far enough, it will go around them out where on BLM and Sieben Ranch Company, and there's no houses out there. Please just keep going north. It keeps going north, and we're going to go up there and see, and you'll see where it jumps the power line road eventually. The power line keeps going straight, and the terrain turns, and the terrain's more, is stronger, the stronger pull than the little two-track road that's under that power line, and it sucks the fire across, and the fire jumps the road, and now it's got a mile of uphill with the wind, southwest aspect. It's your worst nightmare. It has everything it wants, unlimited fuel, and it just starts running to the northeast. And again, structure guy in me says, this is okay, this is okay, we're doing okay. It's gonna go up far enough that it's gonna miss the houses. And then Mother Nature laughed at us.
And that's what we call a cliffhanger. More with Bob Drake and the North Hills Fire coming up after this on Coffee Break. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk. Now, back to our show. Welcome back into Coffee Break this morning. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for sticking with us. And we're continuing our look at the North Hills Fire this morning on Coffee Break. Playing for you sound from a tour of the site of the North Hills Fire. Tri-Lakes Fire Chief Bob Drake was explaining before the break how the fire started going north, a little bit northeast, and that was okay because it was headed away from the structures. But then the wind changed.
Just like that. The wind shifted to this and started coming. So we got all these resources in here. We're fighting the edges. We got this cul-de-sac we're gonna go to, full of trucks. We're doing everything we can to hold it. And the fire turns just like that. And we're dropping our hoses and we're running like hell because the fire is coming back at us. And we had to stream out of here on that really rough road, which I'm going to give you a taste for on the way out when we're done on Big Belt.
Kidney killer.
Yeah. And we're streaming everything out of here, and Jerry Shepard, who was the volunteer IC. We got all these volunteers in here and the DNRC folks, and those ICs were the last ones out of here to make sure that all the resources that had been in here were safely out of here, and the fire comes racing back, lays down, and the smoke is streaming out over Snowdrift and out Mountain Meadows, and we're together going, this is not going to work. And we started evacuating the corridor where the projection was that the fire was going to go, which is Snowdrift, Mountain Meadows, and Countryside, and all the tributaries off of that that are one way in, one way out off of those three roads. So Black Sandy Loop, West Haven, Antler Way, all those, we start evacuating. That's because true. We don't have time.
Still standing in the trees where this fire took off, you can see just, again, how thick they are. They're touching your shoulders as you stand there. And Senator Steve Daines asked Chief Drake, what would happen if those trees weren't quite so thick?
Bob or Chris, I've got a question. If treatment would have been in place, would we have thinned along this corridor, along the road? What effect might that have had on your ability to attack this fire and perhaps prevent it from becoming as big as it became?
It would have been.
I think it would have helped a lot.
Yeah,
it would have made the difference. You know, you can see how thick this is.
Yeah.
Just clearing out some of that underbrush, the understory, it would have given our firefighters a lot better chance. They could put hand line in. It's keeping it out of the trees. We call them ladder fuels. It's basically fire coming up from the crown, ground up into the crowns of the trees. Yeah. So if you go through and mitigate that, you just basically have a ground fire.
Right.
And this stuff is pretty easy to dig hand line in. But it was just too thick. We had half our guys running chainsaws just trying to open it up to dig hand line. And then it takes another handful of people to clear that brush. I mean, so you're just taken away. But
And this is worthless.
Yeah.
Well, there's no commercial value to it. There's no...
The reason I ask that, because this is a case study in what we're doing or trying to do with that bill I have with Senator Feinstein, California, where you got a Democrat from California, Republican from Montana here, crafting a piece of legislation. And Diane's been driven by the devastating wildfires we're seeing right now in California in the last few seasons, right? A lot, 85 people have died, 15,000 homes destroyed in California. But one of the provisions of that bill would be to expedite treatments within a half a mile of roads. Because 90% of human-caused fires start within a half mile of roads. So kind of playing the odds here a little bit, if we would have had that treatment in place here, and by the way, it's not only roads, but also transmission lines, proactively manage the forests, if we would have had that in place, we might have had a better shot here containing this early on, at least.
And the picture that you're doing, for us as a firefighter is, it's a half a mile on each side of the road, so we've got a mile.
Yeah.
And because when we're spotting, this fire is spotting a half a mile.
Right.
When we had the Merriweather fire, there were spots 8 miles in front of that fire with the plumes that it was putting up. But a mile would be huge for us to have the ability to have trucks.
It's back on an initial attack, right? Spots. That's where it can make all the difference,
absolutely,
right? Yeah.
In that absolutely.
Point. Where you're not, spotting isn't even an issue yet, right? We're just trying to get
usually it's not.
In.
If it's not getting in the trees, and maybe a juniper or something is throwing spots outside.
Yeah.
It's just a nice little...
We as citizens, we have to take our forests back from the environmental group, because no management is not natural. I mean, that's just a misnomer. We've got to stand up and demand that our forests be healthy, and thinning is what makes it healthy. And we've proven the wildlife gets better, the trees get better, the ground gets better, everything gets better when we thin. Everything gets better when we thin.
After the tour, I spent some time chatting more one-on-one with Chief Drake.
Like you just said, there are those accusations out there, aren't there, of they just let that burn. They could have put that out.
I'm telling you, and I'm just going to speak as a volunteer. The volunteers have one goal, to go back home.
as quickly as we can. And the only way that happens is if the fire goes out. So there is no action that we won't take that we can do safely without killing anybody that we won't take in order to get the fire out. And we push on our partners, and we push on everything with that one single goal, and that's that the fire go out and us go home.
I saw too, there were people, you know, well, all those planes are just on the ground. Obviously that costs money. They don't want to spend money. They should have had those planes up in the air, you know, like Saturday morning or something. They're saying, hey, well, I drove past and all those planes are on the ground. There's other factors at play there, right? You're not just going, well, we don't want to write that check today. We'll do it tomorrow.
I know for a fact that that's not it, because the check gets bigger if we don't. If we can use that asset and keep the fire smaller, the check gets smaller. So I know that, that it is not about money. It's about the pilots can only fly so much. There's mandatory maintenance. There's mandatory sleep time. There's mandatory maximums that they can fly. And in the choices that we make in using that aircraft, and then we don't have any aircraft. I mean, I don't have any aircraft. I don't have an Air Force. But I can tell you that if we can only have them for 10 hours and we start them at 7 in the morning, then they're going to quit. They have to quit at 5. I only got them for so many hours. I need them for the safety of our firefighters when that stuff is roaring. Because when we call on the radio, they're going to come drop a bucket of water on our heads and save our butts if we have to do that. But if they're not there, I'm telling you, when those rotors quit turning, our sphincters get tighter, because our safety net is now on the ground. And that's, you know, it's, there is a balance and there is a dance that is orchestrated, and there's one goal on the North Hills fire, and that was to put it out.
Well, and you talk about safety, as you mentioned, when we were up there, at one point it was drop the hoses and run, right?
Correct.
I mean, put people in that situation.
It is not fun. It is not fun to have the fire raging at you. It's not fun to, on mountain meadows and even in the grass, when we got 6 and 8 foot flame lengths kind of coming at you. And even though you're in a truck, if that pump hiccups, if that truck, your life's in danger. And we've got backups, and you know, the truck behind you is going to spray your truck to protect you and all that stuff. And we're doing all we can, but there is so much risk that we're taking in order to stop it out there, because what was the consequence? If it jumps this road, there's continuous fuel to the all the way down, damn near to the causeway. And we can't live with that. And so we moved heaven and earth to keep it on that side of the road, and we were successful. Why, I don't know.
Because you moved heaven and earth.
Right.
And you had guys, you know, with their backs to people's property. I mean, you were in backyards fighting this thing.
Correct. We were.
Which, I mean,
absolutely. And again, it's, we treat them like they're our house. We had volunteer firefighters' houses evacuated. We had those volunteers working in different parts of the fire because they're not allowed to work and save their own house because they'll take on too many risks. But we had volunteer firefighter families evacuated. We know what everybody's going through, because they brought their dogs and their cats and their boats and all their stuff to my house, because that's what we do. But it we're living it too. It's our neighborhood, you know.
You talked about lessons learned, you know, years ago, and that's why we're working so well together now. Are there lessons learned out of this situation, for, you know, maybe in the road situation where you could not move up there fast enough if something got really bad? Are there lessons that are coming out of this that hopefully we can do something for the next one?
Absolutely. Every single incident we do, that we go on, whether it's a simple medical call or a complicated fire like this, there's things that we learn from that. There are things that I will share with my officers about, not mistakes I made, but not thinking about a resource that could have made our life easier. And I want to share that with them so that when they get into that situation in the future, which we will, that they make a different choice than I made. And to make it easier for and safer for our people. It's something as simple as ordering a dozer or asking for a dozer line, that so that we wouldn't have to keep going back and protecting the same spot over and over again. Just didn't enter my mind at the time because I don't have a dozer.
Yeah.
And we will teach and learn from that. And the other things, the lessons that we learned from 2000 and the Bucksnort Cave Gulch fires and the Tostin Modlow and Boulder Hyore and all those fires and the cooperation and the teamwork that came out of all of that, we benefit and live today.
Is there something going ahead that we can do about the condition of those roads? Because as you said, it's not just fires. It's you're going up there on medical calls. Should there be something done is an easy answer, but is there something that can or will be done?
There's something, obviously, that should be done. Some of the residents don't want the roads fixed because they don't want anybody in there. Well, they certainly are an effective barrier because you don't want to drive in there and you wouldn't want to take, you know, decent vehicle in there. But at the same time, you know, you can understand from the county standpoint that there's only one road and it's a county road.
So the North Hills Fire is out, but there are still definitely issues to work on in the future. Thanks going out to Chief Drake, to Wally, to Chris, to all the guys that helped organize that trip up there for us and who were up there for days putting that out, putting their lives on the line to protect us, to protect our property. Thank you. I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow.